William D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you, joined by Mitch Light of The Athletic to talk about college football. Now, Mitch, I was looking at the Tennessean earlier this week. May have actually been earlier today. Days run together for me at this point. And I saw a headline from our friend Gentry Estes, columnist for the Tennessean. Is Vanderbilt football capable of upsetting Virginia Tech? Yes, actually, wrote Gentry Estes in the Tennessean. Virginia Tech, 13.5-point favorites against Vanderbilt this Saturday morning, Saturday at 11 o'clock. Do you think Vanderbilt has a chance to win this game or at least make it far more competitive than the bettors think it will be?
Well, good afternoon, Adam.
Hi, Mitch.
I mean, the cop-out answer is I don't think they're going to win, and sure, they can make it more competitive. Week one's historically, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get. Let's look back last Saturday, obviously, with that result, Florida State, Georgia Tech. In the transfer portal era, especially with Vanderbilt this year, we truly, really have no idea. They have so many new players. They've got new offensive coordinator, new quarterback, new defensive coordinator. All three starting receivers are gone. So it really is a mystery. I will look at it from the Virginia Tech standpoint. Some people look at this team as a dark horse ACC contender. It took a while. Brent Pry's first year was a struggle. Then they got hot. They played better last year. A lot of it once they committed to Kyron Drones, as the quarterback. Then the other school of thought is, okay, this was a good team. They went 7-6, but who did they beat? Old Dominion, Pittsburgh, who won three games, Wake Forest, who won three games. Syracuse was the only team they beat with a winning record, 7-6. Boston College, Virginia, and then they did beat Tulane in the bowl game after Willie Fritz left. So I think it almost depends on how good is Virginia Tech. If Virginia Tech, the team that some people think is a top three or four team in the ACC, and Drones is as good as he was last year, then probably not. If they're just a middle-of-the-pack team and Vanderbilt plays well, protects the ball, sure, that gives them a chance to win the game or make it more competitive.
Now, Mitch, after this weekend's upset of Florida State, will this be a year where this new system is truly tested? Because I do believe that Florida State is not going to be the only team in week one. Now, we just got through week zero, but in week one that will be upset. And we know that because now the 12-team playoff, you can potentially lose two, possibly even three games and still get in the playoffs. So do you think it will be tested because we will see more of these top teams losing early on, especially with the transfers coming in and new quarterbacks at that position?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and we're already looking how the committee reacts to certain teams. Now, you should look at each team based on their resume. But if you're a committee member in 3 months and Florida State is 10-2, if they make the conference championship game, do you say, well, you know, they had a lot of new players in that Georgia Tech game. They clearly didn't, you know, the offensive line didn't mesh, and DJU was his first game there, and they're a much better team. Like, do you forgive them for struggling because they had all the transfer portals? Like, in college basketball, there's so many games, your resume, you can forgive of early part of the schedule to get your act together. So I'm just curious how the committee is going to react. And, you know, I mean, that's just, there's going to be a lot of tough decisions to make because we're going to see a lot of teams with 2 and 3 losses. And how do you judge a 2-loss ACC or a Big 12 team versus a 3 or 4 loss SEC team? So, you know, not a great start for Florida State, but, you know, obviously they picked a season in which it's okay to lose early because they'll have ample time to get their act together.
Now, looking at it, I know it's early on, Mitch, but the way that the SEC and the Big Ten is set up, do you think the SEC still gets in more teams? Because I'm looking like now, even in the Big Ten, you got Oregon, and many people pick Oregon to win. There are some people that are picking Oregon to win the Big Ten and ultimately go on to the national championship. But it seems like they have at least two more teams that have a pathway to the playoff. But do you still believe that the SEC will ultimately get the most teams in?
You know, it's another cop-out answer. It just depends on how many teams are there with 2 or 3 losses. And you know, the Big Ten, you can argue, is almost better position. Like, if all goes true to form in the Big Ten, you know, you got Ohio State, Oregon are kind of on another tier from everyone else. and then maybe Penn State, Michigan, Iowa, USC. Like, there's a lot of mediocre to bad teams in the Big Ten, so I think there's going to be a lot of Big Ten teams with gaudy records. With the SEC, there's more, a little more balance, a little more strength throughout towards the middle, so you're going to see more. So it just depends. There might, like, if there are 4-8-4 teams in the SEC, those teams might not get in, but if they're 9-3, they got a better chance. But if it's a 9-3 Missouri with that schedule they play, they might not get in. If it's a 9-3 Georgia with that schedule, they're going to get in. It's just so early, and we just don't know, because not all these, like I just said, not all 9-3 records are created equally.
We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football. We got the full slate coming up this weekend, so let's hit on a couple of games, Mitch, of note. Clemson, Georgia, on paper, number 1 versus number 14, intriguing matchup, but Georgia's a pretty heavy favorite here. What is the gap between those two teams?
You know, from an overall roster standpoint, it's pretty large. You know, you look at Georgia, it's a team without many weaknesses, and Clemson's just the unknown. If they are, you know, it's famous. Dabo famously does not plug holes in the portal with the portal. So whatever we're in the offseason with most teams, you're a little weak at cornerback or defensive line. You try and plug some holes there. Clemson has not done that. Does not do that. They are banking on year-over-year improvement. Now, Cade Klubnik was a 5-star quarterback recruit, played last year as a sophomore, had some good moments, some not-so-great moments. It was his first year under Garrett Riley, Lincoln Riley's brother's offensive coordinator, so you would hope that they would take some step forwards. If you're Clemson, what you really want is to see some production at the wide receiver position. You know, they were, during their heyday, the quarterbacks were great, their defensive line was great, but they also had elite wide receivers. They have not had that. They've got two freshmen that are going to play a lot, two top 50 national guys. So if they can improve at the wide receiver position and put some pressure on Georgia, I think they've got a chance. If I'm Clemson, I feel better about this game if it's like week 5, not week 1, because I just think right now Georgia's the more complete team.
Tennessee opens against Chattanooga coming up this weekend. They're only favored by 38.5. But going back to what we discussed last week, Mitch, where you're group of writers at The Athletic, and there's 28 of them, they all voted for who they thought could make the playoffs. I believed that a few more votes would come in for Tennessee. They got a couple, but tell me what you think needs to go right for them to sneak into the playoffs this year, which would be a reasonable goal.
Yeah, you know, you look at Tennessee, and I was, as you were asking the question, Will, I was like, you know, what's Tennessee's major weakness? You know, it's there's two things that come to mind. One is just the league they play in. It's just where they fall in the pecking order. It's just difficult to, if you're going to vote for playoff teams, you probably, you know, you got Georgia and you got Texas clearly ahead of them. You probably got Alabama and then Ole Miss and Missouri, you know, kind of the two darlings, and then LSU, if they're getting better on defense, which we think they will, new defensive coordinator, they're probably right now ahead of Tennessee in the food chain there. And then we haven't even mentioned Oklahoma and A&M and Auburn. I think Tennessee, you know, on paper, the secondary is clearly the weakness there, the unproven part of their team. And Nico, while fantastic in the bowl game last year, the landscape over the years is littered with young quarterbacks who played well in the bowl game and then struggled the next year as the starting quarterback. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but he's not maybe the sure thing that a lot of people think. We'll see what happens at wide receiver. You know, they're Chris Brazil, the transfer from Tulane, banking on him to be really good. Need that one game breaker at that position would help there too. So I think it's just a product of the league being really, really good rather than, you know, Tennessee having a lot of weaknesses.
One more game that really has caught my attention, and I probably wouldn't be alone in this, but Notre Dame against Texas A&M. I got a lot of questions about both of those teams. The post-Jimbo Texas A&M, they're playing at home. They're a slight favorite, even though they're not ranked as high as Notre Dame. And Notre Dame has got this brand new way of getting into the playoffs, but they know they cannot be a top 4 seed. It's an interesting needle to thread.
Yeah, and it's a huge opener for Notre Dame, and they are so inexperienced in the offensive line. Charles Jagusa, the projected left tackle. Now, he wasn't a returning starter, but a former top 50 national recruit was going to start a left tackle. This is, and Pete Sampson wrote about this, it's one of the most inexperienced offensive lines we've seen at Notre Dame. And if you look at the Texas A&M roster, where are they good? They're really, really good on the defensive line. So that's obviously not a great recipe. Now, Notre Dame will counter with a running quarterback in Riley Leonard, who, you know, was at Duke last year and can throw the ball pretty well, but he's really effective running the ball. So, you know, Mike Denbrock is their new offensive coordinator. Where was he last year? LSU, Jaden Daniels. So I'm sure they'll have a good plan for Riley Leonard to evade that pressure, the defensive line, if some of the young offensive linemen struggle there. So, yeah, it's a pivotal game for both. Obviously, Notre Dame, it's, you look at their schedule, it's not very difficult this year. If they win this game, it really sets them up. I mean, look down, they get Louisville at home. They go to Georgia Tech now. That could be a more difficult game than we thought. They get Florida State at home and at USC. So it's not really a difficult schedule. So if they win this game, they are set up really nicely. And Texas A&M's kind of lurking, maybe in that Tennessee area where if things go right, they could emerge as a you know, college football playoff hopeful. Sam Kahn, our Texas, become our Texpert, Texas Tech A&M writer at The Athletic, had a really good story today on Mike Elko and the culture there coming from Duke and how it slipped in the last few years under Jimbo. And now, you know, there's an adult in the room. And so maybe just an injection of the new coach and all that could really propel this Texas A&M team.
Now, what do you think of Utah? Because people are picking Utah to win the Big 12 and to find themselves a spot. I even seen in some mocks where Utah would be a team that would get to bye. They would be one of the first four teams in because of them being a conference winner. But what do you think about Utah?
Sorry, Derek. Someone just showed up at our house. I like him a lot. You know, Cam Rising, seventh year senior quarterback. I think he's 25 years old.
Wait, explain that. Seventh year?
Sound jealous, Will. You want to suit him up?
I was just wondering, can I get back in there or something? Like, you know, exactly. How does that work, seventh year? Like, sixth year, I kind of get.
You get the COVID year and then two season-ending injuries. So, you know, you can apply for – we don't need to get into that. But, grief. You know, that's seventh year senior. I'm a big fan of Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator. I thought, you know, you look back at during the Derek Mason era, and when was Vanderbilt good in offense when they had a good quarterback in Kyle Schumer, but then Andy Ludwig did a great job. So I've always been a fan of him. And they are, I'm going to throw out every Utah cliche, tough, hard-nosed, all that stuff, going to the Big 12, which traditionally has been more of an offensive league, but not as much in recent years. Teams are playing better defense there. You got teams like Iowa State and Baylor that have been more physical teams there. So, Derek, I really like Utah or Kansas State to win the league. And as you mentioned, if they win the league, they're going to be a top four seed. Everyone needs to get used to seeing these brackets and seeing, you know, Clemson as a three seed and Utah or Kansas State as a four seed. And don't freak out. It's not because people think they're the third or fourth best team. It's because they're projected to win their league.
Yeah, it's the automatic bid, which Notre Dame cannot get. It's an interesting flaw in the bracket, but it's a necessary flaw, I guess.
But Notre Dame agreed to it as well, too. So they were their AD was on the committee or whatever that came up with it.
As you have filled out your 12-team playoff bracket, Mitch, do you have any spicy takes on a team that you expect to make it to the playoff or a seeding of a team in the playoff?
Well, I should admit this publicly, but we all had to submit our brackets. And I was one of two staffers. I did it because I'm a rule follower, and the email came in, and I wanted to get it in quickly. I forgot in that moment that there's the automatic bid for the group of five team. And so I did not have a group of five team in mind. So that's my spicy take.
Shortchanging Memphis or whoever else could be in that.
I don't care what the rules say. No group of five. So, no, then I added Memphis to mine. So I went – I'm trying to think. I don't have it in front of me, Adam. I went pretty chalk. I think I picked Clemson to beat – and I'm not just saying this now. I think Clemson to win the ACC championship, not Florida State. I think that's going to be fascinating, the ACC. Slight tangent. You know, Miami-Florida this week. Can Miami live up to the talent on their roster and maybe overcome some game day coaching there? So, I think the race for the G5 team, whether it's Boise State, Memphis, Liberty, even though they don't play anyone – is going to be really interesting. But I didn't have, other than maybe Clemson winning the ACC, I didn't really have anything too spicy.
Mitch, we had so much fun last, early part of the season watching Colorado play the first four or five games. It was unbelievable drama and fun. And I'm coupling this with something that happens every year over Labor Day weekend. There's always an FCS team or two that either come very, very close to pulling a huge upset or actually pulling it. Jonathan Hutton came on our show earlier today, and he was making the call for North Dakota State to beat Colorado, who's a 10-point favorite, I feel like there could be drama here. Like, I don't know if they're going to win, but I am very curious, and I feel like with Deion and everything, all the storms swirling around him, this could be kind of a fun game. But tell us, what do you know about North Dakota State? Do they have maybe a chance?
You know, 10-minute heads up before the show, Mitch, could you do a little North Dakota State research? You know, would have been nice.
Do we have any general thought? Like, are they supposed to be good? Like, I'm assuming that they've been really good in the past, right?
Yeah. North Dakota State. They have, you know, from when they won the three straight national titles, they have taken a half a step. They've actually been passed by by the Jackrabbits of, how about that, from South Dakota State. Their rival has kind of pass them on the
no shame FCS. In being jumped by a jackrabbit, right?
Yeah. on the food chain there. There is an interesting note about them in the offseason. Their head coach, Doug Entz, I can't remember, E-N-T-Z is the last name, he left to be a linebackers coach at USC under Lincoln Riley. So you don't see that very often. A championship-level FCS coach leaves to go be a position coach. So they have a new head coach there. Can't tell you much about their personnel other than they've been good. And this sounds like a cliche, but they're a program that expects to win. Hmm. And, you know, they're going to go down there. I'd love to be in their locker room for the game. They're, you know, we're the blue-collar team. No one's ever heard of us. Tough guys, you know, grew up on a farm, and we're playing these pretty boys from Colorado and all the NIL deals. So it's going to be fun. It's Thursday night. Colorado is improved, but, again, it's a portal program. 5 new stars in the offensive line. How are those guys going to mesh? You know, we know they've got a great quarterback, and Travis Hunter's one of the best players in the country. And if you forgot Will Shepard, the transfer from Vanderbilt, 5th-year guy, I assume we'll be starting at wide receiver there. So they're good at the skill position. So I am for Thursday night, I'm definitely looking forward to watch that game.
Mitch Light from The Athletic joining us, talking about college football. Mitch, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the games this weekend.
You too, guys. Take care.
Yep.
So, D-Mace, what do you think? We do have underdog picks debuting tomorrow at noon.
Spoiler alert, I'm not picking South Dakota State.
Or North Dakota State.
Or North Dakota State.
I don't know who South Dakota State plays.
Yeah, to pick Colorado, to beat Colorado. Now,
you're not opposed, though, to take a little guy.
Oh, yeah, I'm not opposed. Oh, I'm not opposed to it. But then again, you know, I mean, sometimes you just know what you know. And what I know is it's going to be hard for them to beat Colorado. Regardless of what you think of Deion and his, you know, overturn of the roster, they still got Shedeur Sanders at quarterback, and he is a hell of a talent. They still got Travis Hunter that plays both ways. And they've upgraded at certain areas. They still going to have an offense that tries to get the ball down the field because of their quarterback. So, you know, the part we don't know about is how good would their offensive line be, and will their defense be able to stop a nosebleed? Because last year they couldn't. You know,
here's what I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for Colorado to lose, and then for Sean Keeler, the Denver Post columnist, who's banned, was not allowed to ask questions of Deion Sanders. To ask the first question of Deion Sanders, we'll see what happens.
Do you think Deion had the guy from Seinfeld ban Keeler? Because remember the guy from Seinfeld in the grocery store? You're banned. Jerry, you're banned. I think Deion should have brought that guy in to ban the guy. Just do it right if you're going to do it.
Oh, man, don't get me started on the whole thing.
Because Deion didn't do it. He sent the guy in there, and, you know, they laid out in an email why this guy was banned. It's a heck of a story, right? And it's gotten a lot of controversial reviews. He's not the first guy who's been banned. There are some people in this city that have been banned from various places.
Oh, wow.
I'm going way back in the history of sports talk, like, it involved Greer Stadium and the Sounds and a former co-host of mine, a mentor of mine.
I feel like you're narrowing it down a little bit.
Well, Plaz and Joe Biddle got banned from Greer Stadium for a period of time. It was quite comical. It became, of course, a serious hot topic on the show for a while because George was talking too much Braves to Larry Schmitto. You know, the great owner of the Sounds at the time, Larry thought they should be talking a little more Sounds on the show.
He got banned.
Joe and George got banned.
Did he have a picture at Greer Stadium? Do not allow this man.
I don't know if I don't know what they got the message. I don't think they had to put signs up, but it was only temporary. It was resolved after a while, but there was a ban.
It's never.
I
good
think
to
that
be
might
banned.
Have even before the Seinfeld ban. when Jerry got banned.
So they got it. They
was
got
it a grocery store that Jerry got banned from? I don't remember. It was the grocery store.
It was Kramer. Kramer got banned because the peach was bad, and he said, well, what am I supposed to do? God Kramer. Makes the peaches. And, okay. and he goes, I can't tell Jerry. You. Well, I think Jerry eventually did get banned as well, but Kramer was the first to get banned, and then Jerry.
And then Larry David got banned from Mocha Joe's, right?
Yes.
But then he had to build a whole spite store.
Yeah, he had a spite store, Latte Larry's. I have a hat. My wife got it for me for my birthday or Father's Day or something.
So all this to say, the Colorado game on Thursday night, I'm saying from an entertainment standpoint, there's a lot of avenues here.
Oh, there will be.
I'm rooting heavily against Colorado for maximum chaos. 615-737-1025. There was a story I came across yesterday about a player, a well-known player in the NFL that apparently the Titans may have been interested in trading for. We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.